You're listening to the Experience Points Podcast, episode number 138 for the week of August 17th, 2011. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points Podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
My name is George Albor.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a website created and dedicated to serious but not humorless analysis of video games and culture. And before this podcast begins, you know how it ends.
That's true.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that was the tagline for the game.
It was Halo Reach.
Yeah. Halo Reach. We just played Halo Reach through co-op on the campaign. And dipped our toe into the multiplayer and dragged our singed asses out of the multiplayer after a few rounds.
We did. You know, we had a long-running sort of Halo podcast series where we went back and played each of them. And then there was a huge gap between playing Halo 3, because you had never played the series, and playing Halo Reach now. I did play Halo Reach myself.
Yeah, this is the first time I had played it.
Yeah, I couldn't resist. I had to do it without you.
Yep.
So, in this podcast, we're going to talk a bit about Halo Reach. For those who haven't played it, I'm quite surprised. but we'll go ahead and cover some of the more mechanical stuff early on before we get into story spoilers and whatnot.
Yeah.
And we'll let you know when we get to the spoiler section, so you'll be forewarned and you could turn us off and pause it. Go play the game, come back, and listen to it later.
Yep. So, with that, I guess we should start off with the more mechanical spoilery stuff.
Yeah. Well, real quick, what were your expectations going into Halo Reach in terms of the mechanics?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because it was a big deal when the game was first announced that this is not your mom and dad's Halo anymore.
Yeah.
They're going back to a completely different system.
Mm-hmm.
They let you know early on there's going to be health packs back in the game.
Yeah.
They previewed some of the abilities that players would have. And you were around, at least, when there was a lot of the sort of critical buzz around Halo Reach.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to know, like, what did you expect going in?
I'm always kind of wary about, just about prequels in general, because I don't want a thing to happen akin to, like, the Star Wars prequels, where the technology looks better than the technology in the originals because they made it later in our time.
Right, of course.
And so I was like, I really don't want there to be a lot of sweet technology that for some reason Master Chief doesn't have in the later series. But that being said, I think it wasn't that bad that they added a bunch of mechanical things, and they have to, right? I mean, it's a new game. And I think they did it in a way that can kind of justify why they did it. And specifically here, I'm talking about the, I don't really know what they call them. I guess loadouts.
The sort of special magic abilities.
every Spartan has a special move, basically. Yeah. You can sprint or jetpack or
armor lock up
and shields.
Yeah.
There's just a variety of perk-like stuff. Really, it felt a lot like perks.
Yeah.
I
did get the feeling when playing the game that maybe it was justifying it by saying, well, Reach falls, and all that technology goes with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good way of just wiping the slate, I thought. Because, Reach is in a bad way at the end of that game, and so it's not like you're going to get any of that technology. Yeah.
And we know that this is where the Spartan technology is coming from.
Yeah, yeah. And so that kind of stuff was all right. But Halo is Halo. They didn't really do that much to the weapons. There was, like, some tweaks with how the weapons would fire, how much, what the magazine was or something like that, but
I think they were also very aware of the aesthetic feel of the weapons.
Yeah.
Because they look different. They look like early models.
Mm-hmm.
Even the enemies, the elites and the brutes and the grunts, are all artistically different than they are later on in the series.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they haven't gotten their new armor or what have you.
Which is also kind of strange in and of itself, because Halo 1 picks up basically seconds after Halo Reach ends.
And they're all wearing better armor.
Yeah. So it's an impossible line to walk, which is one of the reasons why prequels kind of irritate me. Like, it's an impossible position to put yourself in as a creator.
Yeah.
And it's a weird position to put the audience in at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, that being said, I love the game.
Yeah.
It's just, like, philosophically, we branched into this prequel discussion. But anyway, back to Halo.
Yes. So what did you think of the loadout abilities?
I mean, it was At first, it was very strange, because I use the running one most of the time.
Yeah. Well, that's the default.
Yeah. They just kind of throw you in there. And at first, it was kind of strange, because I'm not really used to Halo moving that quickly. It felt a lot more like Call of Duty, because in Call of Duty, what I do is, you know, you spawn into a map, you start sprinting immediately.
Yeah, get some cover or something, yeah.
And so it made it feel a bit more, initially, it made it feel a bit more akin to all the other shooters that are out there.
Yeah.
And I think that's just a function of where design is. I mean, Uncharted has a sprint button, you know, almost every shooter out there has some kind of roadie run slash, you know, non-offensive sprint.
Do you think they could have just gotten rid of the sprint?
I mean, I think the environments are so huge that they had to have the sprint.
Yeah.
Especially how we were playing. I mean, we played on hard difficulty.
Yeah, legendary.
Yeah. And
or heroic?
Whatever it is. We're just so hardcore. We don't even know. We don't even know.
Heroic, I believe, yeah.
And it's already a difficult game, but when you're out completely exposed, you need to be sprinting.
Yeah, you need to find, I mean, there's not a cover mechanic, but you need to run away sometimes. Yeah.
And I mean, and Bungie's always really good about having expansive environments with clusters of kind of encounter space. Mm-hmm. And in Reach, it just felt bigger than ever. And so to cover that amount of ground when a tank is firing at you, it's almost a necessity to have something.
Yeah.
Or else you're just sitting duck.
The one thing is, I somewhat wish it was more useful during actual combat.
Uh-huh.
Because with the sort of new, it's not new, I mean, I guess it was in the first Halo, but the health mechanic where, you know, you've got a certain number of health packs, you do have a rechargeable shield, but when you run out, you die.
Yeah.
It does not reward you for running into combat and just start meleeing people left and right.
Yeah.
I tend to be the person who likes to hang out and fire ranged anyway. So I didn't find it all that useful other than traversing between areas on the map after I've already cleared out some enemies.
Yeah. I mean, I felt like there was some, and maybe this is just a function of me not having played Halo for a while, but I felt myself being kind of chastised by the game for running in like an idiot too early.
Yeah.
Like, I really needed to think about, okay, you know, three shots to the body, one shot to the head type thing, because like you have to destroy that enemy shield before you go in, because one melee won't kill an enemy.
Right.
It'll just break the shield and leave you exposed while their shield recharges.
And they blow you out of the sky. Yeah,
and so it's like, you can run up on somebody, but before you run up on them, you had better have shot their shield down first.
Right.
Or else
that's
it.
And looked around them for other enemies.
And so, like, it's something that I don't know if they have changed as the series. It's been so gradual, I'm not sure if they changed it from, you know, ODST to Reach or 3 to Reach or something. But maybe I'm just rusty, but I found myself getting a little bit in over my head once I realized I could sprint in and run up on people.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely correct. And I think the whole feel of combat is very different from at least the other Halos. It's much more akin to almost to ODST.
Yeah.
I think it exists in a comfortable zone between the two, where I do feel very threatened and I can't just run in there like a crazy person and start throwing grenades.
I think Halo 2 is probably the high watermark of that.
Yeah, of the ability to
the melee
run
stuff.
And gun.
Yeah. I don't really mind the health packs. I think it does give you a sense of permanence. Like, you can't just hide behind a wall and let all your health regenerate. Like, some will regenerate, but not everything.
Yeah, and the weird thing is, it's not something that is incredibly crucial. And I think it's weirder playing cooperative. Because if you die, I can just go somewhere and bring you back. And it's not as serious of an issue. Playing on single player, when I played it the first time, and I only played maybe half of it in single player, I found myself occasionally just running away from combat, searching for health back, and then coming back, which can be a little bit boring, but it wasn't overbearing. It didn't happen too often.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good point to transition into the difficulty, because I don't know, like I said, maybe I'm just soft, but this felt like the most difficult Halo I've ever played.
Yeah, I think I would totally agree. Absolutely.
There were some times where we would just walk into an encounter and three explosions would happen and then we'd respawn.
Yeah, and be like, I don't know who knows how that happened.
Yeah.
Or where you'd have full health and then before you know it, you would just go down to zilch. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not like, it wasn't in such a way that it was like an endlessly spawning enemy well, like in Call of Duty. Like, there were certain enemies lurking somewhere.
Yeah.
that you just didn't notice, mm-hmm. or you didn't take out in the correct order or something, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, that'd be it. You know, you'd be gone.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, the closest I felt before this was probably maybe Halo 1, where there were certain encounters that we had to do a bunch of times in a row.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons is because there's that new green rocket launcher bullshit weapon that yeah. all the enemies would have.
Yeah. That they didn't have in the first one.
I don't know if they had it in the first one or the second one or the third one, but I know if we could show a chart of all of our deaths, probably 70% of them would be at the hands of one of the
enemies. The alien rocket launcher, yeah.
Crazy.
I mean, I think it's also, it's partly the shield thing, because I feel like the shield drops faster than normal.
Mm.
Even the grunts felt more deadly. And not just the suicide bombers,
but
in general. And the other thing is, I'm wondering if maybe the AI is smarter than it's ever been as well.
It could be. I mean, it's nice. I'm glad that we have consistently played on hard difficulty all of the Halos, so we can at least have some kind of systematic way. But you're right. I think the grunts had better weaponry.
Maybe, yeah.
And some of them actually had shields, I noticed.
Yeah.
Like, and which was, you know, usually the grunts are just kind of an annoyance. But now I actually found myself, you know, as cowardly as it sounds, I found myself kind of getting worried when I'd see three grunts. It's like, what?
Well, it's interesting because it made a really cool dynamic where when we saw grunts, we eventually realized we need to kill them first.
Yeah.
Because their gunfire isn't, they're not shooting peas anymore. Like, we need to clear them out before we move on to the elites.
Yeah.
Which is not something I remember playing as strategically in any of the other Halo games.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was also this sort of immense fear whenever we saw a dropship.
Yep.
We'd be like, there's a dropship. We need to get ready. Find a position you're good in. If you can take out a few guys when there's that small animation where they're landing, do it.
And the dropship's no joke, because the dropship is not, I mean, it is a scripted event, but it will also shoot at you.
Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes there'll be a grunt on a turret and the cannon that's part of the ship.
Yeah, it was no joke. Like, I was really surprised at how difficult it was, because I always think of Halo as kind of one of those, you know, hard casual style games.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to play Halo. Yeah. And so I was really surprised to you know, get my ass handed to me as many times as it did.
I wonder if, I almost feel like it was probably very intentional to make it harder, because then you feel like the Fall of Reach is actually happening.
Yeah.
Know? When you see more dropships coming, you know, like, this is, I had a hard time with that. Mm-hmm. There's no way a bunch of non-Spartans are going to be able to deal with it. You know, it felt earned, the Fall of Reach.
That's true. That's true. What else? What other systems type stuff should we talk about?
Well, you know, I think there was, I really like the game as well, but one of my minor complaints, I think, is that some of the abilities didn't feel all that useful, or maybe it was just we weren't really taught how to use them.
Yeah.
In particular, armor lockup, which I think is a really clever mechanic, especially in multiplayer, but we saw it put to far better use than we ever did.
Against us.
Yeah. It just felt kind of wasted.
Yeah.
I felt the same way about the jump packs. They weren't used all that often in the game.
There was one sequence where you kind of had to use it to get into a tower.
Yeah.
And other than that, it was pretty optional, I think.
My favorite one was using the, not the clone, but the hologram.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the AI would attack them. And sometimes they would, I almost felt like they knew, like, that's not you, that's a fake you. Mm-hmm. But it would be far more useful than even active camouflage, which when you're moving, they can still see you.
That's right. And I think when you're shooting, it kills it for a second, and then it has to, like, you know, recharge or something. Yeah, I don't know if I used the active camo once during the campaign. I used it a little bit during the multiplayer, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
That is the one part where I feel like it was kind of a reaction to where first-person shooters have gone since Halo 1 came out.
Right.
Like, I mean, and even on balance, Halo is still a very traditional shooter,
mm-hmm.
like, in the sense that Doom or Quake is a traditional shooter. Like, there's not a lot of stat tracking type stuff. There's not a really, you know, it's not a very RPG-esque shooter, whereas I think the rest of the market has kind of gone in that direction.
Yeah, so they wanted to give you some choice.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird now, like, loadouts are a common feature across every game almost, and you know, Halo has finally kind of gotten to that point where they are integrating it.
Mm-hmm.
Not very, I mean, not, and it's not very deep. Like, it's just a single special move.
Right.
You know, it doesn't really change your stats or anything.
And the fact that we didn't have to rely on it, I think, was really nice.
Because
it made for moments where we used it successfully, and it was like, wow, that was pretty awesome. But it wasn't something that we relied upon as almost like grenades or something like that.
Like Halo's strength always is, it wasn't scripted. Like, yeah. You know, it was something where we could... It's so... You know, Halo encounters are great because they're kind of... They're my favorite type of game where it's an active puzzle. Mm-hmm. Like, it requires reflexes and tactical thinking on the fly. But there's also definitely, you know, strategic ways of approaching an encounter.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can charge right out of tank, and we did.
many times.
10 times in a row. Yeah. Until you realize, oh, I should really start exploring the terrain or think about a different weapon or something like that.
I remember there was a one map area in particular where we must have died like 30 times. It took way longer than it should, it felt like. And we went so far as going back and finding a tank we'd left behind.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I don't even remember what we ended up doing, but we tried so many different strategies.
We prayed.
And there's even a moment when you abandon a strategy and go, okay, let's just both get on ghosts and rush it and see what happens. You know, maybe this time it will work out in our favor by pure luck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has that scope that Halo games always have, where you can jump in an airplane, fly around the entire map, jump out of an airplane, go into a building completely seamlessly. Like, however they stream the levels in is just genius, because there's no loading, there's no, you know, the pop-in is minimal, mm-hmm. even with two players on the same screen. It's just, it's so, the environment feels so interactive.
Absolutely.
You know, and not like you can touch every plant or press every button way, but it's like, if you can see something in Halo, you can go in it. Like, that huge scarab has an interior with enemies in it.
Right.
Even though you're miles away from it in a plane.
Yeah, there's a great scene where there's many scarabs, and we abandon them because you don't need to kill them.
Yeah.
But we know from the other games, and of course they put it in there knowing that we could take them out if we wanted to.
And as we were driving by, we could see them in the cargo bay shooting at us, like grunts and stuff. We're like, nope.
Yeah.
Just keep going.
What did you think of the aerial scene in the space combat?
Oh yeah, that was the big, I remember this from when it was released. That was the big, like, exciting thing. Oh, space combat for the first time.
Yeah.
I thought it was a pretty neat, set piece. I think that was like, I mean, we never died on that set piece at all, which was, I think, probably intentional on their part. Like, it's kind of a palate cleanser for what's going on in the ground.
To be fair, I did crash into a thing, I think, and died.
But... Well, I mean, okay, the enemies...
We were never shot down.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and there were times where I was taking damage, and I was like, oh, this isn't going great. Yeah. And then I would roll or something, and everything would be fine.
Yeah.
And so it was a nice... it was a nice palate cleanser for everything that was going on the ground, and still making it look cool.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that it was only one sequence. Because I think you would start seeing the thinness of that sequence would become more apparent.
Yeah, it wasn't robust enough, I think, to be incredibly fun.
But there's some clever things. Like, I remember you pointed out when we were playing that the reticle also has a secondary HUD element that points you to where you should lead your shots.
Right. Which I thought was really cool. Yeah. And that scene itself, I think, led to... I believe it led directly into the following scene when you board one of their mm-hmm. Armada ships.
Yeah.
Which was made for a really cool scene and a great environment change.
Yeah.
And so it was a really nice transition, and they didn't have to put it in the game.
That was the space scene where you're in a low atmo environment.
Right, exactly. And you're jumping, your jumps are even higher, and all the sounds are really muted.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, throughout the game, there are set pieces that are absolutely gorgeous and play differently and are really interesting.
Yeah.
And in terms of that scale you were talking about, the set piece when you're inside the city and you're flying around from location to location is mm-hmm. probably one of the best set pieces in any of the Halo games.
Yeah. And because every skyscraper you go into has its own environment, and... then you jump back out to the helicopter that you left, and it just
feels
great.
Like you're navigating a city. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't, you know, whatever mojo they're working, like, for their
whatever
next...
sort of black magic.
Yeah. I mean, it's great because so few games have that, you know, have that unbroken sense of place.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, even large scale games sometimes feel really forced, you mm-hmm. know, or really empty, or also not realistic. You know, there are times when it's like, why would this be built in this way? Why is this here? But even the land formations feel realistic.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of care put into that, and something that they're not. They don't make it contrived to make them, you know, work the same way in multiplayer. Like, they take inspiration from the single player and then use it for the multiplayer maps, but the multiplayer maps are still very arena-driven. Like, it feels like an old Quake type thing when you're playing it.
A lot of the multiplayer maps from the previous games appear in Reach as as level maps in the campaign mode.
There was that one where you pointed out, I recognized it once you said something. It was, you're inside of a building or something. It was kind of an atrium type.
Yeah, it was actually in the city level,
Yeah.
So I guess we should probably move to some of the story elements. We don't have to put up spoilers yet, though.
Yeah, not really. I mean, you know.
I mean, everyone knows.
Hey, everyone, guess what? Yeah. all the Spartans that you see in the trailer of Reach, they don't survive to Halo 1.
Yeah, in fact, let's just say spoilers now. Yeah. I'm sure you've played the game or know about it and don't care that much. So what did you think about the idea of playing these other Spartans in the first place?
I mean, it's always, I'm always interested to see what other Spartans are like.
Yeah.
Because all we really get to do is see Master Chief, and he's kind of...
He's a little cold.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, and people kind of treat him like that. People treat him like a demigod.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's kind of a robot slash, you know... I don't know. He's not a human to a lot of people.
He comes off as, like, the chosen one. Yeah. I think people treat him as the chosen one in that universe.
And they do it on purpose. You know, they never show him taking his helmet off. You know, they never show his face or any of his skin. Like, and so it was kind of weird seeing all these Spartans without their helmets on, just kind of hanging out. Also customizing their stuff, because it seems like Master Chief is a very, like, stock dude.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't draw a skull on his helmet, like, you know, the dude that... So these felt, you know, like, actual characters rather than an idea.
And they still treat them differently. And there are scenes when, you know, when you first, another really cool set piece is when you first land in the city that's being evacuated by the population. And everyone's like, oh, we have a Spartan here? Sweet, this is going to go so much easier.
Yeah.
Of course, it doesn't go that much easier. But it still feels as though I am in the universe and I'm being heroic, even though I'm not the Master Chief.
And, you know, they have kind of a, you know, like a Dirty Dozen type vibe. Like, you know, there's the demo expert, there's the sniper, there's the Russian one. Like,
Well, even when Noble Six is first introduced, they talk about how she's a lone wolf.
Yeah, you know? You're a loose cannon, Noble Six.
Which is, I think is, maybe not, maybe this was unintentional, but I felt like it was sort of a nod to how you played the game in the previous ones. Like, you're not Master Chief anymore, you're not alone.
Yeah.
And you don't need to do the sort of bravado actions, you don't need to run into combat like a crazy person.
Yeah.
This is a different game than that.
Yeah. I didn't really feel like that was backed up by the gameplay, though.
No, I didn't think so.
I mean, like, half the time we were screaming at the top of our lungs, charging into a tank. Like,
to be fair, like, you and I were playing together, so...
That's true. Yeah. I'm trying to think of... Because, you know, they do this thing where each major plot point involves the death of one of the Noble team. And I'm trying to figure out if I remember each Noble team's death. Because I think that's a good test for how much I was paying attention to the story.
Go for it.
So, the first one was the first one the captain or the sniper?
It was the captain.
Because the captain was the one flying, right?
And there was one before it. The guy who blew up the ship in outer space.
That was the first one?
I think so.
See, look.
Look, it doesn't matter the order. Uh-huh. Everyone dies except for that person. Uh-huh. So, one person gets sniped.
Yes.
Right? One person crashes their ship into a scarab, which is a really cool scene.
Yeah, I remember that one, I think that was the captain, wasn't
it? That was the captain, yeah. One person blows up the bomb manually.
That was the big dude.
The Samoan Spartan, apparently. Mm-hmm. And one person gets killed by a sword wielding.
Yeah, they go down and fight, like, hand-to-hand elite combat or something. And that's it, right? Is that all the Noble team?
Well, you're Noble Six, so isn't there six of them? I think we're missing one.
See, this is the thing, that, like, it's not... It's not like I think it's a bad game or a bad story. It's just the story of us playing it is so overpowers what's going on in the background that I don't know if they could ever make something strong enough for me to actually remember the order in which Noble Team went down. Like, I feel like they try really hard, though.
They do. I kind of disagree a little bit. I really enjoyed the sort of background story, but I guess... There was one point in particular, and it's towards the end, when they're talking to Noble Six, and they're saying, I'm sorry. Noble Six is talking to Keys from the other games, saying that it wasn't just me who earned you this. It was all the people who came before me. True. And every time someone died, I felt like the mantle that Noble Six was taking was suddenly greater. The burden was larger because all of these other people were now gone and Noble Six was doing it alone.
Yeah, yeah. I think that idea is fine. Like, I think Halo's really good at the concept of it. But, like, the specifics start to fall apart for me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I'll ever... I was really surprised that they made a big deal of whichever noble that was the son of the woman who was basically programming Cortana.
Yeah, Halsey's kid?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was really surprising to me. Like, I didn't expect that because, you know, the Halo... The personal interactions in Halo are never really where it's at.
Yeah.
And that was... To me, that was an attempt to make it more human, you know, like, to make you feel more for these people that you're playing as. And it worked, maybe it might have worked like moment to moment, but the idea of it was better. Like, oh, you know, this woman basically sacrificed everything, including her son.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, to do it.
Well, and I wrote a post on Pop Matters a long time ago, or maybe it was on her own side, but just about the different sacrifices that happened.
I was remembering that as I was playing
And I agree with you. Like, I don't think that it necessarily makes this game any better.
Yeah.
But the idea of it makes the entire Halo series better. Mm-hmm. You know? There's a scene when you're helping some ODSTs, and you hear Nathan Fillion, who plays Buck from ODST.
That was pretty amazing.
He's in there. Like, Buck is in that. And you realize, like, what you're doing and the sacrifice that the sniper made was in service to this guy, who's going to then play his own role in the sort of greater combat.
And you have a retroactive appreciation for all the shit that Buck went through.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, as you're playing as Buck post Halo 2/3 world, you realize that he actually has been around here from Reach and possibly beyond.
Yeah, and he's earned his stripes, and he's been there when it felt like everything else was kind of falling apart.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, that kind of retroactive appreciation is nice that they were able to do that.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means for playing them in order, you know, what you do.
Yeah, I mean, I was when I first made that post, I think I was talking to someone saying I would really be interested to see how people would think about the Halo franchise if they had played it in chronological order.
Yeah.
You know, do Reach first, then Halo 1, like then I guess ODST 2 and 3, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think ODST takes place in between 2 and 3 or something like that. You were talking about on our last podcast about whether my mind would be changed about Cortana after playing, and again, I have nothing against Cortana. It just, she kind of seems like a Deus Ex Machina type thing.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that. I mean, I don't think it makes it as clear that like Halsey sort of has imbued Cortana with her own personality. Mm-hmm. Like, the moment I heard Halsey's voice in playing Reach, I was like, oh my god, that's Cortana. And that was surprising to me. I'm sure it's probably in the novel somewhere. And how she has an affinity for the Master Chief, and therefore Cortana does.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's not... It's not like Cortana is that big of a deal in this game. She doesn't talk or anything. Mm-hmm. But since I have an affinity towards Cortana, and I know the sort of relationship that she has with Master Chief, especially from Halo 3... You know, where he goes back to save her unnecessarily. So the fact that she was
somewhat unnecessary. I mean, they don't want to get all that information.
But I think it felt powerful to me that I was the one making Cortana and taking her to the ship. Like that felt like a really big deal because that is absolutely necessary.
Yeah.
For the Halo series to keep going.
Yeah, for the universe.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was intelligently done. Mm-hmm. You know?
Did it seem kind of weird that? I don't know. I felt like when she was saying, oh, it chose you, Spartan, I was like, you know, like, wait a second. She chose Noble Six first and then chose Master Chief. Like, I thought Master Chief was special. I thought they had some kind of, like, you know, cosmic link or something.
She gets around.
She just specially chooses people all the time.
Yeah, like, Spartans, left and right.
Master Chief is just a sucker. Like,
she just rolls a dice. Yeah.
And so it brought up more questions for me about, like, oh, you know, what is the role of this AI? You know, what is... Where's the line between how human she is and how, you know, mechanical she is?
Yeah.
It's fine. Like, I hold nothing against Cortana. It's just, it deepens my curiosity towards people that really love Cortana, Master Chief, Halo type.
Yeah, I mean, for me, whenever I hear that sort of, like, I chose you thing, and she talks about luck in one of the other games, it almost feels more like there's something special about someone, you know? Mm. Like, the reason that this person is so heroic is not just that you're a player. It's that there's something, a part of you, that makes you, you know, tenacious or willing to go through so much. Much in the same way, oddly enough, that the rat man in Portal 2 sort of refers to Chell in the comic book. That the sort of when a player controls someone, they become more than just who they are. They become someone who's almost has the sort of nobility that we imagine of sort of medieval times, right? Like the gallant knight who can overcome so much and becomes almost godlike. So I don't know. It felt fine to me that she was like, "Yeah, Noble Six, you and me, we're cool like that."
And you know, I think Noble Six had a nice send off. The whole game is basically a send-off because this was Bungie's last Halo game.
Right.
And so the credits roll and they kind of break the fourth wall by giving the player a little letter at the end. Like, you know, hey, thanks for playing all these games over the years, you know.
Yeah, brought to your mind.
Yeah, like, love Bungie. And it's like, oh, that's kind of nice. And then they dump you back in for, like, one last final suicide mission with Noble. You just play till you die.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought, like, what you're saying, like, the kind of, the gallantry of it was well expressed by that.
I remember, I just kind of disliked that last suicide mission.
You don't like that stuff. You don't like the unwinnable battle.
I don't like
the unwinnable battle. You don't like the horde modes or the, like, the wave after wave
of enemies. I don't, yeah, so that was frustrating. But I think more importantly, narratively, right, we see all of these people who sacrifice things, other than, I guess, the sniper Spartan,
Well, she was doing, like, info, like, she was doing, like, intel or something, and she got too slow.
There are moments when it's like, I've achieved something, and now I die, and I earned it, right? Mm-hmm. I'm dying because I just achieved that.
Yeah.
The level, even, is different from where you last left Noble Six.
Mm-hmm.
And I get this feeling, like, when playing that part was, I had already made my sacrifice, right? Mm-hmm. I had made that sacrifice when I decided to stay on Reach.
Mm-hmm.
And protect the Pillar of Autumn as it left.
Mm-hmm.
But then this is just, I don't, it just felt really unimportant because I wasn't dying for any reason anymore. I had done my, I wish I had died then and there. Mm. I wish I had had a final climactic battle to save the Pillar of Autumn that wasn't a turret sequence.
Yeah, that was a bummer. I mean, turret sequences in general are bummers. Yeah. It was a bummer to have a turret sequence. But that's why I liked the final Last Stand so much.
Yeah.
Because I was all bummed out that the turret sequence was the last time I would ever touch a Bungie-designed single-player Halo game. Yeah. And then all of a sudden I got, you know, booted back into an actual arena where there was things to do.
Well, so I compared, in the post at least, this sacrifice to the sacrifice in Left 4 Dead 2, where you actually have to go out and push a button and you're being overwhelmed and you know you can't make it. Like, it's purely just trying to go out there and making the decision to sacrifice yourself.
Yeah.
I would have been far more happier with something like that, that combines the suicide mission with a turret sequence or something, you know?
It's so hard to script that stuff. Like, I'm trying to think of other people. I mean, Valve is the one that I keep coming back to. Another thing that it reminded me of was the final Red Dead Redemption, John Marston's final action. It was heavily scripted, but you could at least take down as many people as you could.
Or just one, like I did.
Or just make an example out of one person. But I mean, like, and you are dying. You're dying for a reason. Like, you're letting your family get away.
Yeah.
But it's more heavily scripted than it was in Reach, where you can kind of navigate your way around the arena while you're trying to do it. It's not as noble.
That's exactly,
you know, like, because you're running, you're on the run dying, you know. Yeah,
it's ugly. It's an ugly death.
Yeah,
I mean, even the way that she sort of puts up a fight is just kind of disturbing.
Yeah.
And it's hard because there's no reason anymore, you know, like, you're not doing something as heroic as everybody else. You know? Like, there's a scene where the guy blows up the ship and afterwards, they comment about how sad it is, and they go, well, at least he died thinking that he had just saved the day.
Yeah.
And we can all hope for that.
Yeah.
And you don't have that death.
Well, I mean,
you save the day.
Yeah, I mean, you're hoping that the Pillar of Autumn is jumping to the right place, basically. And what else is there to do than to try to take down as many elites as possible before you kick it? You know, you kick the bucket.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it just means that I have kind of a dark personality, but I actually kind of liked that... the end was somewhat grim. Like, it was kind of meaningless.
It was tragic and far more dark than anybody else's death in the game, I think.
It was lonely. Like, you weren't there with anyone else. The rest of your team was gone. There was no one really to celebrate you afterwards.
It's so depressing.
It is depressing, but I think it's kind of neat. Like, I admire games that leave players that don't... I admire games that don't go out of their way to kind of lionize the player at all times.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it makes a strong thematic statement to just say, well, sometimes bad things happen.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, especially in light of Noble Six being a lone wolf, that scene in particular, you wish you had backup.
Yeah.
You know, you wish you had someone else to help you out. It's really, I mean, even the atmosphere is sandy and dusty. You can't see very far.
Yep.
Yeah, I could see that.
Random-ass rocket launchers shooting at you like usual.
Yeah, I could see that being... And, you know, immediately after that scene, there's a short clip of Cortana basically talking about Reach and what you gave. Yeah. And I think that was really beautiful. I really enjoyed that.
It's a nice... It, you know, it redeems a little bit of that ugliness that happens at the end. But, yeah, it's a nice... It's a nice goodbye to Halo for Bungie.
Yeah.
I thought it was really... And I don't know if... Had I not known this was going to be Bungie's last Halo game, I don't know how much I would have picked up on it. I would like to think that there is some kind of sense that pervades the game of finality to it.
Yeah, almost like... almost like someone has, like, a terminal illness, and they're like, this is their last goodbye, without actually saying it.
But it's also... It's not like... It's not, in some ways, that's true. Like, you know, this is the final goodbye that we all knew was coming. But unlike someone with a terminal illness, like, you could argue that Halo has never been stronger than in Reach.
Yeah.
Like, it looks better. The weapons are more varied and balanced than they've probably ever been.
Yeah.
You know, like, the environments are more expansive than they've ever been. Like, this is, like, basically the epitome of Halo.
Right.
And then they're just kind of sending it off, which is kind of nice. You know, they're not, like, running it into the ground.
Right.
But... Well, I mean, they're giving that to 343 to do, but I mean, like, I don't know. I want to believe that had I not known Bungie was moving on to different things, I would have kind of gotten the sense that this was a group of people saying goodbye to something that they had been working on for a really long time.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know if that's, you know, who knows? I can only speculate, but it is a nice feeling at the end.
Yeah, I agree. One thing I wanted to talk about briefly before we wrap up. Do you kind of wish that Master Chief had been in the game in any way, shape, or form?
Yeah, I don't know. I was thinking about that, too. You mean, like, even, like, a little cameo where you see him being wheeled into the... Because he's in stasis at this time, right?
I mean, I guess. I'm not sure what he's doing on the pillar. I mean, yeah, he's on stasis on the pillar.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no one even mentions him, do they?
I don't know. I can't remember that.
I don't recall anyone saying, Master Chief was awesome or anything.
You know, what I thought at first, like, the package was going to be was Master Chief. Yeah. I thought they were going to be getting him off of the planet to the Pillar of Autumn.
A little harder to carry, I think.
Well, that's what I thought. Like, they were calling it the package in, like, an ironic way. Like, this 10-foot dude, like, they had to, like, get his stasis pod into the ship somehow. But, it turned out to be Cortana, which is... essentially the same thing.
It's more like an R2-D2 moment, you know? Cortana is to Master Chief the way R2-D2 is to Luke.
I mean, you can go into the whole hero story thing. Yeah. Like, she is the artifact, but I mean, I don't know. It's... I guess I'm somewhat glad that they just didn't do it in a cheesy way.
Yeah.
Because that could have gotten really... You know, that could have gotten really cheesy really fast.
Yeah. But I got the sense that I kind of wish I knew... I kind of wish Noble Six knew what was at stake and knew that there was another Spartan or something like that.
Yeah.
Because knowing that Master Chief is, he's the last Spartan, right?
Pretty much.
Everyone dies on Reach.
Yeah. I mean, maybe in the expanded universe there's other, you know, like how Luke was the last Jedi. But there was actually other Jedi scattered around. And
that, yeah.
So, I mean, maybe there was, but you're right, like, for all intents and purposes, Master Chief was like the lone wolf.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe it would have been nice to have them be aware of it. I'm just glad they didn't do anything like have him bust into a scene, like shoot 50 dudes, run away.
I'm like, I gotta go.
Yeah.
Superman style.
Yeah. I'm glad they didn't do that. But, you know, that kind of silliness is better suited for the Dragon Ball Z-esque cartoon series that I hope they're working on.
Yeah. So overall, how do you think this game ranks amongst the other Halos?
I'm trying to... I don't know what I said in the past. I'm pretty sure I said Halo 1 was my favorite Halo.
Yeah. Well,
ODST. I remember liking ODST a lot.
I think you go Halo 1. I'm guessing what you think. Yeah, yeah. So I'm guessing that you think that Halo 1, ODST, Halo 3, Reach 2?
Maybe. I'm thinking of switching Reach and 3. Because I think I liked ODST because I like the idea of, you know, the health pack and med pack combo. Yeah. And I think they did a lot of neat stuff with the environment, like the big cities.
Totally.
But something about, like, the way that the circular combat goes in Halo 1, I still think I like that the best. I don't know. I still think Halo Reach is... I don't know. What you say something. I'm too indecisive.
I mean, I think that Reach is one of the best Halos. Absolutely. I think it's probably the most... Mechanically, it's probably the best.
Yeah.
I think I really enjoy Halo 3 quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that they took away the special grenades that they had.
They still have the sticky. They just don't have the brute grenade.
Well, they don't. And how about the, what is it called? Like the shield, like, you know, the secondary weapons.
Yeah, but they kind of replaced them with the abilities, right? Yeah. They have the shield. You're right, though. You're right. I mean, it plays very differently.
You can't pick them up, I guess, is the difference.
Yeah, but I was really, and again, in my opinion, Halo Reach makes all of the other games better. Like, mm-hmm. I think all of the other games, they're, at least narratively, are more interesting. The Master Chief himself is more interesting.
And if you think about it, now they all have a unique aspect to them.
Yeah.
Like Halo 2 and 3, you know, Halo 3 has the unique thing of having the equipment-based mm-hmm. systems, and Halo 2 has dual-wielding.
Yep.
Halo 1 is, like, the original that is more, I feel like it's more melee-focused, and it also has health packs.
Mm-hmm.
Reach has the special abilities. ODST has the kind of different... has, like, the more tactical-based
map-type
things. So, like, they all have... It's neat that they all have their own unique features.
Right. And I do think that if, you know, anyone interested in the Halo franchise, Reach, ODST are amazing contributions.
Yeah.
Because they flesh out the universe in a really interesting way and play around with the sort of mechanics that they have and the AI.
I think the Reach mechanics make for probably the best multiplayer experience, too.
Absolutely, yeah.
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 I mean, seeing those people... seeing someone do an armor lock in front of you, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna wait till he comes out of armor lock and shoot him. And then someone from behind him leapfrog jetpacks over the armor locked dude, shooting me while I'm waiting. It's like, oh great, clever girl. Yeah. Like, you know, like, yeah. And so that kind of dynamic, you know, it doesn't come through in the single player.
Yeah.
And so, like, it showing how all that stuff opens up in the multiplayer, I think you'd be hard-pressed to argue what's the best Halo multiplayer experience.
Well, what I can safely say is that after playing Reach again, I miss Bungie. I miss someone who can make something like this mm-hmm. that's just so damn good and so much better than so many other first-person shooters.
The AI is nuts.
When we were, the whole time we were playing, we kept being like, wow, this is amazing. It's so refreshing. The AI, the scale, the combat, the everything mm-hmm. was... It's just so nicely put together and fits so well together in a way that others just don't really match up.
Let's speculate for a second. So Bungie's working on some super secret project right now. What do you want to see them take from what you've seen before and put it into their new thing?
I think that when they're being smaller scale and more personal, like ODST and Reach, I think they shine even brighter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need a Master Chief. I don't want another heroic thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I would like to see more kind of squad mechanics.
Mm.
And I think I would like to see... I think them stay in the sci-fi realm would be good.
Yeah. The squad mechanic is interesting because I actually thought there would be more squad stuff in Reach. But it just wasn't, like, you never gave commands to anybody or anything. I think that's probably a good frontier, you know, for them. And also, I mean, I don't know, like, there's rumors that they're making some kind of, like, large-scale, persistent MMO shooter or something. Ooh, like,
snap. Yeah.
And something like that would really show off how talented they are at making simultaneous, you know, indoor-outdoor environments and making walking tanks and stuff. You know, something that can accommodate a lot of different players in a large space and still have each of those spaces... you know, accommodate really interesting battles mm-hmm. rather than just kind of an open... You know, it sounds kind of like, from the rumors I hear, it sounds kind of like they're doing like a Tribes type thing or something, like huge scale stuff.
If anyone can do it right.
Yeah. Right? But I mean, I just hope that they I hope that they keep that kind of crunchy combat that you get when you're up close and there's a lot of different cover systems and stuff in place.
Yeah, I'm fascinated because I would love to see sort of what they almost feel forced to leave behind.
Yeah.
It did feel like, at least with this game, they appreciate what they did. It's not like they're kind of distancing themselves from that, anymore.
Yeah, for sure. Whatever they put out, we'll be playing it and talking about it on a future podcast. So I guess it's a moot point. I guess we'll wrap it up here. If folks want to write in with their thoughts, questions, comments, experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And of course, experiencepoints.net is the website. Come on down and leave your comments to this podcast. We'd love to hear what you thought of the game when it first came out. And maybe if you've played it again recently, if your thoughts have changed at all.
All right. Until next time, take it easy.
Finish the fight.
Finish the fight. I need a weapon. I'm going to give them back their bomb. And so forth.